Today we are in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 20. You can go ahead and turn there. I want to tell you a little bit today the story about a fence. We are in the Sermon on the Mount, which is the most famous speech by the most famous person who ever lived. It's about murder, this passage. It's about hatred and anger and wrath. It's about slander and tearing people down, this passage. It's about Jesus taking aim at one of the most sacred Old Testament commands that we have. It's about all of those things. But this passage is also about offense. In Matthew 5:21, Jesus begins very plainly by saying, "You have heard it said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whomever murders will be in danger of judgment." Now, this is not just a command. Now, this was built on a command. You have heard it said. This is not just a commandment that they have heard said, but this was actually a culture of life that Jesus is referring to. It goes all the way back to the beginning. When in the creation story, God says of Adam and Eve that he made them in his own image, there is a value on human life. When Cain murdered Abel, God said, "Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." There is a heartbeat and a passion for life from God. After Noah and the flood, God made a covenant with Noah where he said, "Anyone whom sheds a man's blood by man, his blood will be shed," which is partially where Jesus is getting this reference. There is a thread throughout the Old Testament scriptures of the value and sanctity of life. But it wasn't just in the written law. It was also in the oral tradition of the Jews. It was also in the Talmud. In the Talmud, the oral tradition of the Jews, it said, "He who saves one life saves the world entire." And also, all commands should be broken and violated to save a person's life. The sanctity of life, the value of life, was a cornerstone of the Jewish faith. It was hugely, hugely important. And so for Jesus to look at this culture, to look at this command, to look at this idea and point at that and say, "It's broken," is unusual. And it's offensive, even. In Matthew 5:22, Jesus begins by saying, "But I tell you." We can go ahead and stop right there, because this is where Jesus is preparing to tell them about offense. But first, he's going to make them really, really angry. "You have heard it said, but I tell you." This is going to be offensive for them. Well, you see, some things you just don't say. And Jesus is saying what you have heard isn't cutting it. What you have heard isn't good enough. What you have heard, we can do better than that. Now, what did they hear? What they heard was Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. Very simple command: "You shalt not kill." Number 6 on the Ten Commandments. This is all of that culture of life wrapped up into one little simple phrase and command: "Thou shalt not kill." This is what they had heard. And Jesus is pointing at that, this phrase, this utterance from God to Moses on Mount Sinai. He's pointing at that and he is calling it out. He is calling out the Ten Commandments. He is calling out the Word of God. Everyone in the crowd around Jesus, whether it was 10 people or 1,000, would stop and stare at him like he was crazy. Everyone would stop and stare at him with offense in their eyes, because this is something you just don't do. A few years ago, I did a Biggest Loser challenge in my neighborhood. It was a weight loss competition, and I stepped on the scale one day. It was a higher number than I wanted, and it just inspired me to lose some weight. I thought, have a whole bunch of people do it with me, and you know, it's accountability. It's a good idea. And so I opened it up to everyone in my neighborhood, and about 50 people participated. And I thought this was going to be wonderful, and it was wonderful. I thought, you know, people would come in, they would lose, you know, 15, 20 pounds, just something, and get a little bit healthier. And I thought this was something that was going to be just an amazing activity for our neighborhood to kind of bring us together and get healthy. What I didn't foresee was that on day one, I would have to have a lot of women step on a scale right in front of me. And I was going to have to pretty much ask every woman who participated how much they weigh. I was a moron. And so I remember the first woman showed up at my door, and about that time, you would think that I would pick up on it. and realized this may not have been such a good idea. I might just want to trust them to write it down in an envelope or something. But no, I went ahead and had that first woman step up on my scale, and I kid you not, the word that came out of my mouth, which was quite possibly the worst thing I've ever said in all my life, whoa! There is no coming back from whoa when a woman steps on a scale right in front of you. There is no, and the sad thing is I kind of meant it as a compliment, you know, like in my naivete, she stepped on there and I knew her pretty well and I never would have guessed the number that popped up there. And that's what I tried to fix. And I was like, I would have guessed like half of that. No, that's not what I said, but because apparently that wouldn't have been good either. But there's no fixing it. I just said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say it like that. But you know, some things you say, and it's so offensive that everybody just shuts up. They don't have any comeback for that. Everybody just looks at you like you're a moron. When Jesus takes on the Ten Commandments, there is nothing people say. There's a reason why it doesn't say people picked up stones to throw at him, because this was offensive even for Jesus. To take on the Ten Commandments, to take on the most historical and significant event in Jewish history, Mount Sinai was it. And Jesus looked at it, and he said, that's broken. Number 6 on the list is broken. There's something unusual and offensive about that. Some things you just aren't supposed to say. Exodus 20:13, thou shalt not kill. Significant, powerful utterance straight from the mouth of God to Moses on Mount Sinai. But it was broken. It was stripped of all of its power, its potency, and it was completely turned on its head by the people. The law had become a lie. It was a weak, and it was a former shell of what it was supposed to be. The law itself had become offensive, and Jesus was calling it out. And we understand this kind of thing if you've ever suffered pain or loss or hurt and sat across the table from someone who tries to help. Now, they could say to you, they could say, there is a God above us and around us and within us who draws near to you when you hurt. There is a God who understands human suffering as much as anyone, more than anyone could ever know. There is a God who weeps when we weep. There is a God who tells us that we should count it as a joy and even a blessing, not because suffering is a blessing, but because when we suffer and when we mourn, there exists a God who will comfort us, that we don't exist in some vacuum of a universe where we must suffer alone. There is a God who is out there for this. There is a God who is out there that when we are in the midst of the most painful moments of our lives, this God that exists, even in those moments, he is working it together for your good. Now, if you hear that sitting across from you when you are suffering, maybe, quite possibly, that might comfort you to some degree. But maybe the person sitting across from you will say something just as simple as, you know what, God's in control. You just got to let go and let God. You just got to trust in him. And that is offensive. It's true, but it's offensive. I hate that. It's a cliche. It's an empty platitude, and we know it. We don't want to sit across from someone at a table who says, you know what, just let go and let God. Just trust in him. That doesn't do anything for us. If we're honest, that does so little for us in those moments of intense pain that it's nothing. It's worthless. But we can't say anything, right? Because then we're the bad guy. But when we are hurting, we don't want to hear, just trust in God. We need something more. It's true that we can trust in God. It's true that God is in control. But truth without power is pretty meaningless. And that's what happened to the law. Thou shalt not kill. Truth without power. And it became a shell of what it was supposed to be. They were missing the point. All the people that had heard the law were missing the point. They had forgotten about the fence. Deuteronomy 22:8, this obscure little command buried deep within the Torah. When God says to the people, when you build a new house, build a fence around it. This obscure little command, build a fence around your roof. God is found around this fence. This gives us great insight into the very heart of God, this obscure little command about this obscure little fence. Thou shalt not kill. Well, that's the law. And we remember the law. Last time I spoke, I talked about Adam and Eve and how they had a law. Don't eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat that fruit. And then the serpent showed up, and And Eve said, I'm not supposed to eat the fruit. I'm not even supposed to touch it. Well, what did she do? She created a new law. And this is what we kind of do. And in time, we talked about this last time, how she probably would have created a new law. Don't go near it. And a new law. And a new law until she would have been so far away from the actual law, she never would have violated. Because Eve was doing what we all do when it comes to laws. We create lines. And we focus on the line. This is what Eve was doing, and this is what we all do. It's our default setting as humans to focus on the law and the line of the law. And there's two ways to really do that. One, you can create new lines and focus on those so that you would never, ever break the original line. You would never cross over the original line. Or you can do what kids do. And we know, and adults do this too, but kids do it notoriously. They get as close to the line as they can get without going over. These are the two ways that we really focus on the line when there is a line drawn. And the problem with both is in both situations, we make the lines our God and we worship them. We either get as close as we can and focus on the line like this, or we create new lines and focus on those lines like this. In both situations, we are idolaters. In both situations, we make the line our God. When the law becomes a line, we have completely missed the point of what it was supposed to all be about. Generations of hearing the command, thou shalt not kill, and it became a line. That's all it was. It was just an empty line. And it had lost something. When I was a kid, most of you in this room, I kind of look around a little bit, and most of you, except for this guy, Kenny, on the front row, will know what I'm talking about. There used to be these things called tapes. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Before CDs. These things called tapes. And on this tape, you would record music. And you would hear it on the radio, and you would sit in front of the radio and wait for the DJ to say, man, this song is coming on that you want. And you would hit the button and record it right when the DJ stopped talking. Because you don't want his voice, you want the song. And then you'd have to stop it right when it was done. So you would have only the song and no words from the DJ. And then you would have all of these tapes from all of these different artists that you made off your radio mix. But then you wanted to make a master mix that you wanted to give to a girl that she would laugh at you. And so you would take all of your songs and all of your tapes, and one by one you would put it in there, hit play and record at the same time, and you would record off of your tapes. Anybody else do this, or am I alone? All right, everybody who had tapes did this. You would sit there and for hours make your master tape. This was great. The problem was you would listen to your master tape, and there would be a problem, because a copy of a copy, it isn't as sharp as what the original sounded like, right? The words and the music would be a little slow. And it would be there, but it would be a little slow and a little distant and vacant. I don't know much about music, so I can't describe it perfectly, but you knew something was wrong. And so you would listen to it, the words and the music were there, but it had lost its beauty and its purity. And so you could listen to the song, but it didn't quite have the same kind of emotional connection as that it used to have. Recording old tapes, and all of a sudden, it just lost something. Words and music, but without beauty and purity. Thou shalt not kill. A bumpy, a rigid, it's a boring command. Empty of its original beauty. And there was beauty in the beginning of that command. In the beginning, that command was beautiful. In the beginning, that command was pure, and it did something to the people. It reminded them of something as they were leaving Egypt and at the valley of Mount Sinai. It told them something about God and about themselves, and it connected with them on a spiritual and emotional level that challenged them to be something that they weren't. But over generations, all that fell away. It was empty of its original beauty that was there from the beginning. And that brings us back to the fence. The fence. When you build a house, build a fence around the roof. It's an obscure little command. Well, to explain it, back in the day, Jewish people liked to party. They weren't much different from us. And so they would have parties, and they would laugh, and they would dance, and they would drink. Man, they would drink. And they would do all sorts of just wild activities in their parties. They knew how to party, the Jewish culture. They didn't have TV and things like that to distract them. So it was pretty much hang out, talk, and party. That was their lives. And so they would do these parties, but they wouldn't do them in the front yard or the backyard or even in the house. They would do them in the cool evening on the roof. And they would get on the roof of their homes, and they would sing, and they would dance, and they would laugh, and they would drink. Then they'd fall off the roof. This is what happened at Jewish parties. This happened for a while, and then God, on his throne in heaven, looked down at the parties of drinking, laughing, falling people and said, you know what? Let's build a fence around that and fix it. That's where the command came from. That's really it. God looked down from his throne, saw drunk people falling off roofs, and said, you know what? We got to fix this. And so he enacted a command. And that little obscure command gives us a lot of insight into God's heart. It was a random little command just given to protect drunk partygoers. But you know what? Commands aren't really given by God. God doesn't give commands. He hangs them. Matthew 22:40, Jesus says, all the commands hang upon these two. Well, which two? Which two are he talking about? Well, what happens in this scenario is someone comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? And he says, you know what the greatest commandment is? Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. All the commands hang on these two. Well, how exactly does that work? It works actually really simple. Love the Lord your God. What kind of command would hang on that? Well, how about a command like have no other gods before me? Or make no graven image? Or don't take the Lord's name in vain? Or keep the Sabbath holy? Those are the commands that hang on love the Lord your God. Well, what about love your neighbor as yourself? Well, how about commands like honor your mother and your father? Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not covet. Do not lie. These are the kinds of commands that hang on love your neighbor as yourself. The great commandment, or the Ten Commandments, are really just an extrapolation and an elaboration of the Great Commandment. They hang on the Great Commandment, but not just these, not just the ten. Jesus says all of the commands hang on the Great Commandment. All of the commands hang on love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. Not just commands about honoring the Sabbath and honoring your parents and not murdering, but even little obscure commands about building a fence around your roof. Even that hangs on the Great Commandment. Well, how? See, the fence law was in place to protect partygoers from harm, which flowed out of the sixth commandment that said, do not kill, which is an elaboration on the Great Commandment that says, love your neighbor as yourself. See how that works? Build a fence, which hangs on sixth commandment, which hangs on love your neighbor as yourself. If you love your neighbor as you love yourself, you're going to find yourself building fences for people. You're going to find yourself building fences to protect your neighbor from harm. Thou shalt not kill. Bumpy, boring, and rigid. Do everything you can to preserve and protect your neighbor's life. Well, this starts to feel very, very different. One is a law of restriction, and the other is a law of inspiration. One holds you back, and the other aligns you with the very heart of God. Jesus is reintroducing humanity to their Father. Jesus is reintroducing the idea of a fence. In Matthew 5:22-24, Jesus continues in the Sermon on the Mount, and he says, but I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. What Jesus is doing right here is he is building a fence. He is taking the law and starting to hang upon it. He is offering a new way of living. Imagine a world, imagine a life for yourself where every conflict and every dispute that you have ever had is free from bitterness and anger and gossip and unforgiveness and malice and all those things that dominate our hearts and hold us back and turn us into evil, evil creatures within. They turn us into creatures that are just suffering from our own prisons that we're building for ourselves. Jesus sees this and he is offering a new way, a better way, the heart of God, which is reflected when we do everything we can to preserve relationship. This is Jesus breathing life back into a suddenly lifeless command. This is not about a law. It's not about a line. He's not holding people back. That's not what Jesus does. What he is doing is he is building a platform. Jesus isn't concerned with restriction. He is creating something that should inspire us to become better versions of ourselves, but he is calling us to something new, something better. He is calling us to reach for something. And so we're going to reach. When Jesus calls us to reach, that's what we do. We reach and we strive not to live without killing. What does that say about us to meander through life, managing to not kill someone? You would think God could do better than that, and to give us a command to just simply make it through life without killing someone. That's pretty easy. It doesn't say much about us. So we're going to do better than that. We are going to live reconciling ourselves with those who have harmed us. We are going to live redeeming all of our relationships from our pride and our hurt and our arrogance that causes bitterness and pain, because there is no room for those things in this new way of living. There is no room for pride and arrogance and bitterness and unforgiveness on this side of the fence. There's no room for that here. And Jesus is creating a new way of life where those things don't exist. So we're going to reach, we're going to strive for this way of living. And you know what? We're going to fail. There are going to be those moments when someone hurts us, and we are going to be bitter. We are going to be angry, and we are going to say things we ought not say and slander people that we ought not slander. We are going to treat one another with malice, and the hurt that we feel inside, we are going to vocalize and express towards people. We're going to do these things because we're human and we're going to fail, and we know that we're walking right into that right now. That's where we're going. But even in our failure, we are going to find the best victory of all, a reminder, a simple reminder, a reminder that Jesus did not come and walk this earth just to improve us. He came to transform. Jesus is not interested in just a better version of the old. He wants to transform us into a new thing altogether. In our failure, we are reminded that he will change us into those things, that we will not get there on our own, but that Jesus will change us into those things, whether now or in the life to come. We will become what he will have us become. He will transform us from creatures into sons and daughters, and he will transform us from murderers and gossips and slanderers and people filled with bitterness. He will transform us from the ones filled with broken relationships and hurt and pain that we're holding on to so tight. He's going to transform a community with all of those things into a family. That's what he's going to do. And until that day that that transformation is complete, we wait. And we don't blindly wait. We don't stumble through life just managing to not kill someone. We manage, we do better than that. That's not good enough. What we're going to do is we're going to stop. We're going to look around. And we will take notice of our neighbor. And we will watch for our neighbor. And we will passionately and purposefully build fences where they might fall. And we will serve and passionately and purposefully mend fences where they might now be broken. If you would, please pray with me.